Well, greetings this morning. It's so good to be here. I am tremendously blessed. I'm glad we didn't cancel church. We were talking about it yesterday when the sun was shining bright and it was, whatever, 40-some degrees, and yet a lot of churches were canceling because of the forecast, and it did look scary. Forecast looked scarier yet this morning when I got up at 7 to go out, but the ground was dry. And this was supposed to have started raining at 4. So we were discussing as a ministry the whole way through yesterday and this morning, do we cancel? But these brothers are really slow to cancel church, and I think it's a good thing. And then we headed on our way, and it was 28 degrees instead of the 23 or 4 that was forecast, and that made all the difference. So for us, the roads weren't even very slippery. We had one spot that was a little bit slippery. And I'm so thankful that we're here and have been able to absorb the things we've already gotten today. This is special and really good, and I think God has something in store for us today that He wanted us to get. So I'm thankful we're here, and also welcome you visitors that are here. Just grateful for the opportunity to be together here today. And yeah, I'm going to go just a little different direction, I think, than some of the thoughts that I had. I had a message on faithful living that I was going to share, and maybe I'll share more of that message another time. But the burden that was on my heart has some definite outworkings in where I feel God wants me to go here this morning. Before I start in with that, I'd just like to bring you greetings from the church at Faith in Ohio. We were there last Sunday, had a really nice time with them. Real blessing to reconnect with them. It had been a number of years since I was there. And of course, that church has grown and multiplied and grown and multiplied and grown and multiplied a few times, so that the net effect was I probably only knew less than 25% of the ones that were there. There's still a good few old faithfuls who knew me. I shared an opening message. Brother David was preaching a series on finances, and so that was his fourth in a series of five. And so they wanted me to preach the opening and continue with that. So that's what we did. Had a really good time. And for me and the 25% that knew me, it was like the old days. For the rest of them, they were wondering, who is this guy? But it was a good time together. And it was just a blessing to reconnect. Had some really good communication with David and Brother David Mast, who's my brother-in-law. We've known each other very well for a very long time. And Brother Mark Miller, and those two are co-elders there at Faith. And Brother Mark is also on the Agape Committee, for those of you who know that. And maybe I'll give a little more report on Wednesday night about some of our discussion. We had met for coffee Saturday morning and ended up visiting for about 3 hours. So it was really, really good. So anyway, glad to be back here with you again this morning, and glad that we can seek the face of the Lord together. I also echo the bit that Brother Kent shared about yesterday. I was chewing on that all day. That was so golden, and I was so thankful that these fathers and sons, that we could all collectively absorb the challenges that Brother Frank brought our way yesterday. Because brothers and sisters, I'll tell you this much too, and he was challenging us men yesterday. He said a lot of very insightful things, but he said that the problems, the thing that's wrong with the world today is men that aren't what they should be. And the answer to the world today is men who become what they should be. And what defines what we should be, and those might not be his exact words, but those were his thoughts. What defines what we should be? Well, it's understanding who God created us to be. It's aligning ourselves with His purposes and His instructions. And when we align, guess what? Blessing flows. And that's so true in every part of life. And the same thing's true for you sisters. But his challenge, and I believe it's correct, is that we men get ourselves where we need to be before God, and you sisters follow. And I think it works that way. So continue to pray for us as husbands and leaders, and even your sons. They are becoming the men of tomorrow. And that's an extremely important element of our congregation. There is a couple of things, and I actually still have his notes. I was maybe going to bring out in my message later, but since I'm going to go a little different direction here, he talked about holiness, applications of some of what he taught us. So personal holiness for each one of us. And as men, again, this was taking the things that God says and aligning with them and doing them. Personal holiness is a result of godly purposes, godly relationships, godly attitudes, and godly behaviors on a personal level. Do you get that? So it's as each of us are taking the things that God wants for us, apply them in a personal way, and holiness results. That is the process of sanctification. It's not a once and done thing. But as we apply God to our lives and live it out, holiness results. Now get this. Group holiness as a church. We're here as a church. The ecclesia, the community of called out ones. Group holiness results as the fellowship of persons of personal integrity who have personal holiness who are coming together. So we as a group can be holy when we individually are holy. When as fathers we're directing our families in holiness, we as a group can be holy. And group holiness is a result of the conviction to eliminate iniquity in the house of God. And iniquity is a duplicity of heart where we say one thing and we do another. We profess something and we do another. Now I will tell you, iniquity is a big problem in a lot of professed Christianity. And it is the reason that we're lacking group holiness in a lot of settings. And of course, nowhere is this issue more challenged more directly than in the issue of technology and heart holiness in relation to technology that is surfacing on so many levels. Nowhere is it more challenged than that. And there's not a church group anywhere that is not facing that challenge with significant angst. It's being a challenge. And how do we approach it? Some of what David and Mark and I were talking about last week at some length. And how do we approach that issue? Well, I will tell you, it requires personal holiness. It requires personal commitment to the Lord Jesus Christ. And Brother Frank yesterday shared his testimony. And he said, he's 75 years old. That surprised me. I didn't realize he was that old. He doesn't look that old for sure. He doesn't act that old either except for his wisdom. But he looks 60 or 65. But he's 75 years old. He's definitely in the patriarchal stage of his life, sharing his wisdom with us. He said when he was 11 years old, he was in public school. And there was a group of boys who had, he saw huddled together in a corner over something. And he was curious. What are they looking at? What's going on over there? And he had no preparation for what he was about to face. Had no knowledge of what they might be looking at. But he just saw this group of boys huddled together. And I will say, back when he grew up, which is, 60 years ago, that would have happened 60-plus years ago, we didn't have phones, we didn't have internet, we didn't have any kind of technology. And so that was the way it worked with hearts that wanted things that weren't right. He went over to those boys, looked over their shoulder, and they were viewing indecent images of women, naked women, in those pictures, and he was 11 years old. He said, and these were his words yesterday, he said, in that moment, God talked to me. And he said, I stood up straight, and I turned around, and I walked away, and he said, I have never gone back. And he shared that testimony out of the fact that it is possible to walk straight in the midst of a crooked world. But there was a bunch of things that happened in that little interaction that were extremely key to the way his testimony has played out. And first of all is that voice of conscience. And there's not a one of us that doesn't have that voice of conscience. We know God does talk to us. Now it's possible for us to harden our hearts and push that voice away, but God talks to us. When that voice comes, we must listen. And then we need to make a choice, a decision, a response. Who said that yesterday? Here is temptation. Here is defilement. Here is the bad stuff. And the voice of God saying, trouble, trouble. What are we going to do? Stand up straight and walk away. Does that sound like the story of Joseph in the Old Testament? And brothers and sisters, there is personal holiness. And as we give our hearts to the Lord and we seek to walk in that way and we seek to listen to that voice ever more closely and we simply learn to say no and walk away and say no and walk away, we can walk in holiness. And I am so excited and motivated by those things. So anyway, another whole message in that, but I was chewing on a lot of that stuff yesterday and just really, really blessed. So the message I was going to share this morning was on faithful living, but as I listened to Brother Leon share his opening, so blessed with that, and that's why I requested that song. I wanted to sing it. And then Brother Gary shares on the unequal yoke. And there are some things that have been bouncing around in my head for a long time. And I've been thinking of putting them into a message. I'm just going to try and do it ad hoc here this morning. And we're going to see how this goes. So I have no notes for some of the things I want to say. So you're going to get to help develop the message with me as we go. And I have to put my notes together after the fact. But I'd like to just talk for a little while this morning on the Christian environmentalist. And some of that title by itself might freak you out or create a certain amount of cognitive dissonance, and because we don't usually hear those two words going together, Christian and environmentalist. And there's a good reason for that. There's only one man I know of who has consistently put them together. And I agree with most of his views, but not all of them. But that would be Joel Salatin from Virginia. Some of you may have heard of him. He's pretty much considered to be the grandfather of sustainable agriculture, and he's very vocal, and he's very opinionated, and he gets himself in trouble a lot for the things he says. The most latest thing he said is that he wants to get coronavirus. He thinks it's ridiculous. Everybody's so scared of it. So New York Times had a piece on him, and it was, quite a controversy. But anyway, he calls himself a libertarian, capitalist, Christian, environmentalist. And I think there's one more word yet he uses to his title. I was intrigued when I first saw him call himself those things, because most of those words are not things that we would normally associate with Christian. And you could look at each one of those descriptions and why he believes them. But I would like to just focus on the concept of environmentalism this morning and being a Christian and how they go together and how they do not go together with so much of the rest of what we have going on in society about us. And Brother Leon's message this morning is powerful in leading in and laying a foundation for this whole thing. This is my Father's world. For the Christian environmentalist, our concern, and concern is the right word, our care for the environment is based on a faith in God that underlays the whole thing. For the secular environmentalist, it is not that way. And I'm going to, if I can, start drawing some things on the board. And I would like to motivate us this morning with an understanding that there's a mandate for us. There's a call for us. There is a path God wants us to walk in this whole area of environmental stewardship, but it's a different path than what we find in the world about us. And why does that concern me? Because of what Brother Gary shared. This thing of the unequal yoke. And I hope by the time we're done here this morning, you can see how clearly these contrast. There are some ties and similarities, and yet there are significant disparities that if we don't understand the differences in our motivations, which are based on our faith values, if we don't understand them, we're going to find ourselves in an unequal yoke and we're going to go in circles. That's what was happening up here when we had that unequal yoke. And Dad was trying hard to compensate and he was doing a good job. But it was challenging because it was an unequal yoke and you go nowhere when you have that. So, where's my markers?
I need to be taller, but
I'm going to just write the title that I'm proposing. And over here, I'm going to put believer. And over here, I'm going to put secular. You could also put unbeliever. But secular has the idea of finding answers for all of life without God. All right. Can you all see that kind of? Okay. So we've got this contrast of believer and secular or unbeliever, and now we've got this idea of being environmentalist in the middle. There are drastically different worldviews that flow out of being a secularist versus being a believer. They are not in any way connected, because the one not only accepts but embraces the reality of a God who has brought everything into order and continues to give order to it, and the other completely rejects that notion. There is no acceptance of a God that either created or continues to give direction on the secular side of things. But then we have this whole concept of environmentalism, which is concerned about the world we live in, nature. This is my father's world. We've got the obvious atmospheric environment. We've got the earth with everything that it involves, the plants and trees and animals, and of course the interplay of all that includes the weather, and all of that becomes the environment that generates a great deal of discussion these days. Global warming, or climate change as it now is, being a huge part of that. And I want to show you how the mindset that flows out of being a secularist in relation to those issues versus the mindset that flows out of being a believer are so drastically different. And let me make this secularist to be equal to being a believer. So, we will have nature on both sides. Nature as we know it, and it goes with what we were looking at already this morning. This is my father's world. Nature being this world that we have and everything that we experience in nature. So it will include the plants. It will include our gardens. It will include our fields. It will include the weather that we experience. It includes all those things. So we have common ground in that regard. Now, for the secularist who doesn't believe in God, how has nature come into being? Big Bang, evolution. That's correct. It's exactly right. This all evolved. So evolution produced nature, and they would believe nature is continuing to evolve. Things continue to change. Things continue to adapt to circumstances. And there's a degree of truth to the fact that nature adapts. There's a lot of examples that you can look at. But the one thing that we don't see any evidence of, and Ken Ham can wax much more eloquent on this than I can, is that species don't evolve. There's no evolution of the species. There are adaptations that take place within a species, within a specific thing, but there are no evolution of the species where one species becomes a different species. And that's precisely why you cannot get man from monkeys. And they haven't found that missing link, and I dare say they never will, because it doesn't exist. Now, I'm a believer, obviously. What is the believer's perspective of nature? How did it come into being? Creation. That's correct. So we believe that God created everything that's around us. We believe that He designed it. So now our exploration of nature involves seeking to understand how He designed it. What did He make? It's a journey of discovery, because God's beyond nature for us. You see that? The secularist doesn't have that. Nature is an end of itself, and trying to understand how nature became what it is. And where is it going? Now, And I'm sorry, I'm thinking on the fly here, so I have to think how I want to approach this. Mankind was given a mandate coming out of creation. Let's turn back to Genesis chapter 1. This is my Father's world, and we could look entirely at the story of creation, and it's a beautiful story. As God made this thing that we call nature, and every part of it, the light and the darkness, and He made and maybe I should just quiz the children here. It's been a while since I went through all of this. What did God make on the first day of creation? There were 7 days, right? What did God make on the first day of creation? In the back. Heaven and earth. Well, wasn't it, and I guess you could call it that, but it was light and darkness on the very first day. God made light and darkness. He separated the darkness from the light. In verse 4 of Genesis 1. And He called the light day, and the darkness He called night, and the evening and the morning were the very first day. What came the second day? Most of you children should have learned this in school. Heaven and earth, yes. He made the firmament. He divided the earth from the waters. He made the firmament, which was the heavens, and divided it from the waters. And He called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. So we had earth being created and heaven being separated from the earth. What happened the third day? Well, wasn't that the... Oh, you're right. That did come in on the third day. So He made the dry land, and then He made grass and trees. That's exactly right. Put them on the dry land. So when you go out and run around in your yard and you feel the grass, happened because God made that on the third day, right? And so much we could look at there in verse 12. But that was the third day. What was the fourth day? What happened the fourth day? You got it? All right, anyone? That already happened, that He separated the water from the land, but we're down to the fourth day. And I love the fourth day. Yes, He made light. Well, He made the... We already had light, but He specifically made the sun, moon, and stars. And I love to go out at night and look at the stars. Well, God made them and made them be that way on the third day. And He said, let them be for lights in heaven. And it was so. He made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day. What's that called, children? What's the greater light that rules the day? The sun. And the lesser light to rule the night. What's that? The moon. That's exactly right. So there you have it. On the fourth day, He did that. On the fifth day, what did God make? The fish and the birds. That's correct. So the fish swim in the sea, the birds fly in the air, and that is what God made, big and small. It says whales and every living creature in the waters and in the air. God made on the fifth day. What did He make on the sixth day? Animals and people. That is correct. On the sixth day, God said, let the earth bring forth living creature, cattle, creeping thing, beast of the earth, after His kind. And it was so. And then He made man. And I love that story. We could talk a while about that. But God made man on that sixth day. And He created man in His own image, which is unlike anything else that God had made. And what happened on the seventh day? God rested. That's right. And so there you have, as believers, we accept that account of creation. That's how nature came into being. And so for nature, for us, the study of nature is all about understanding the synergy and the relationship of what God created. He's above it. And He designed it, and He put it into being. And He also gave us a mandate that is our relationship to nature. Let's read that in verse 28. Well, let's start in verse 27. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God created He him, male and female created He them. So we're here today as the outflow from that, right? We're all here today as male and female. We're created in the image of God. We're the outflow of that first man and woman that God created. Verse 28, and God blessed them, and God said unto them. Now when God says something, what is that? What is it? It is said. That's correct. God gives us a platform that we're supposed to move forward on. This is a word from the Lord. This is a command, if you will. This is a mandate from God. God said, this is what I want. Now listen to these words. God said, be fruitful and multiply. What does that mean? Be fruitful and multiply. Be reproductive. That's correct. And that's precisely why we can go on down to the end of Genesis chapter 2 and see God's plan for a man to take a wife, come together, they leave their father and mother, they become one flesh, and God's design is for children to come out of that union. Now we could talk an awful lot, and I hope you adults at least are thinking about how all of this shapes up into a very different worldview, a very different way of thinking from the secularist side of things who don't have this. But let's go on and finish this mandate. God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And that simply means go have children. Go have children that can fill this earth. Now today, a lot of what we hear is don't have too many children. The earth is filling up too fast. The earth can't sustain all the population of people. And they put these numbers out there and all of that. It continues to be the misinformation that comes from the secular side, and I'm concerned about how it affects us as believers. So let's follow on and think about that. Be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. And then he says, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth. So we have two words there that are given to us as commands, subdue it, and have dominion. What do those two words indicate? What is the relationship of all the rest of nature that God created in relation to man? And we were created as part of nature, but God makes a distinction here between man, humanity, and all the rest of His creation that He made. The commands He's giving us here in verse 28 are only for the humans. They're only for the ones created in His image. And these are His commands. And He says two things. Subdue it. And take dominion. Let me give you a clue. Does that mean that man is equal to the rest of creation? We had this lesson. No. Heads are shaking. No. Man's not equal to the rest of creation if God says to subdue it and to take dominion over it. Man is put in a position of something above the rest of nature, correct? What's the purpose of all the rest of nature in relation to man? Correct. To serve it. So now let's see. Okay, I'm going to do it this way. I'm just going to call us humans. And we've got humans on both sides. And over here, we have the relationship of nature to humans, which is, let's get to a word here. If we were to combine the idea of subduing and taking dominion over something, you think about that set of oxes that he was trying to train. It was a little rough subduing them there, the way it sounded. But he eventually got to a place that they were able to go in the yoke. But what relationship did Gary have to those oxen? He was taking dominion, and he was trying to make something useful out of them. Did he want them to die? No, he didn't, because he really wanted to train those oxen to be able to actually accomplish a purpose of some sort. So what is a word we could use as we think of Gary's relationship to those oxen, and it's going to apply the same way as our relationship as believers to the rest of nature around us? What's one word we could use? Responsibility. Excellent. You're going the right place. Stewardship. That's it. And I'm going to use that one word here to encapsulate all those concepts that we've been talking about. Stewardship, because in that lies taking dominion. In that lies subduing them. And I'd like to talk maybe a little bit more about how believers go off the rails on this thing sometimes, because not all believers are where they ought to be, I believe, in the command of God in relation to the rest of nature. And that's one of the reasons you don't hear the word Christian and environmentalist going together very often. So remember that. Stewardship. That is God's plan. That is God's mandate. That is God's will for man. This is how He designed this thing to work. He created all the earth, the heavens, the plants, the animals and birds, and then He created the people. And He said, now I want you to take dominion over this. I want you to subdue it. I want you to be responsible for it. I want you to take care of it. It's all in that word, stewardship. For whose benefit is the rest of nature? Human, that's correct. So nature is for the benefit of humans. Now, if we come over to this side, do the secularists have anything between themselves and nature in any similar regard? What is humanity's relationship with nature in the secularist world? That's correct. No, you are absolutely correct. If you look underneath the worldview, and you don't have to look deeply these days to find that idea, man is considered, humans are considered to be inferior to nature, not superior to it. Humans are the problem on the earth, not the beneficiaries of the rest of nature. I'm going to write those two words up here because I think they're very descriptive of what you find. So humans are inferior, and humans are the problem. Now, let me say a whole lot of things about how this can work out. Animal rights come right in beside this environmentalism. And I will tell you this, Christians should be the very best caretakers of animals that you ever find. And you'll never find anybody that gets more annoyed than me when somebody is unnecessarily cruel to an animal. It's wrong. I remember when I was a young man down in Guatemala, I couldn't have been more than 6 or 8 years old, and there was some boys there that were several years older than me. They were in the same Mennonite church that I was in. If I said their names, some of you might know them. I didn't realize at the time how sinister some of the things that I was seeing were, but in subsequent years, as I've had time to contemplate on what I saw there, I'm incredibly horrified. And I do believe those boys have gone on to deal with themselves and do some and amend their ways. But one of the things that they used to like to do was catch caterpillars, these fuzzy caterpillars. We have them around here too, and they were in Guatemala. They would catch caterpillars, and just for the sheer fun of it, they would like to poke them on a fence wire that was sticking out, and they'd sit there and watch them wiggle. And then they'd want to take a match and light it and burn the fuzz off of them and watch them wiggle more. Now, I want to tell you something. That is evil. That is wicked. And when that darkness in the heart is able to exhibit itself towards animals that way, it's only a matter of time till it's also come out towards human beings that way. So Christians should be the very best caretakers of animals that there ever are anywhere. What is our motive for taking care of animals? Stewardship. That's exactly right. We care for those animals because we don't want them to hurt themselves. They are here to accomplish a purpose. And even when we're raising animals for food, and God gave animals to us for food, that mandate came directly to us after the flood. Here in creation, God said, I give you every plant, every herb. Let me just read it so I get it right. I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. What does that mean? Everything that grows on the earth is for food for us. That's what God said. And interestingly enough, He didn't say anything about the animals being food for us until after the flood. But after the flood, when He made that covenant with Noah, which was referenced here this morning, and He made the promise that as long as earth remaineth, seed time and harvest is not going to go away. Cold and heat is not going to stop. Summer and winter is not going to stop. And day and night shall not cease. Brother Leon said this is one of his platform verses for why he doesn't fear what so many other people are talking about in climate change. I agree with that. But it's rooted in a belief in God. Okay? And then God went on to say in all of His instructions to Noah, Genesis chapter 9, and this is in verse 3, He said, every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. What are the moving things that live? The fish and the birds and the animals, right? Plants don't usually move around very much. So He, and then He says, even as the green herb have I given you all things. And then He gives some specific instructions in relation to that about what to do in eating animals, and you don't eat the blood. So we got some interesting instructions that God gives us. But my point is this, God has been very specific. God has been very clear. God has been not ambiguous about our relationship with nature around us. Animals, plants, and whatever it might be. Now, coming over to the other side of this, for the secularists who don't believe in God, don't accept God, don't accept the mandate of God upon humanity, they have no reference for that, no ability to absorb that. And therefore, they look at nature as somehow this whole big muddled thing. And humans are just a part of that. And humans, because of what God designed, that humans are supposed to be dominant, humans have an advantage over all the rest of everything else that exists in nature. We can think. We can make decisions. We can think long term, long range. And there's a lot of very intelligent animals out there that can exhibit the ability to sometimes weigh options and do something. But nothing comes close to the human mind because we've been created different. When you don't have a platform to accept the fact that we've been created different, it creates a real problem in the way you view humans with the rest of the world. And so to our friends who we find all around us in society today, and I'd like to say it's a strong majority of our population. There is a whole bunch of our population that's in the middle here and confused and isn't comfortable with some of this, but they can't articulate why. But the pressure is nonstop. You only have to open any news outlet today and you will find this, just constant pressure. They operate from the platform that humans are the problem in the rest of nature. And this is why humans today are causing these climate changes. Because we exist. The ultimate answer for a lot of them, he talked about activists this morning, the ultimate answer for a lot of them is to reduce the number of humans that walk on the face of the earth. And any way that can be done is a good thing, because humans are the problem with nature. It's also behind the push for all these radical environmental rules that happen to close off sections of our world from human interaction, because humans are the problem. If humans go there, it spoils the rest of nature. And on I could go. There is example after example of these things. But all of that is motivated from a secularist worldview that sees humans as the problem. They have no way for God's mandate to humans to work out in this world. And now I'd like to say this whole thing about animal rights. We care about animals as Christians for the stewardship reason. We should. They would claim to care about animals, but from a completely different perspective. They don't see themselves as stewards of the animals, but they see themselves as equal, or in many cases, inferior to the animals. And so a spider, in some of their minds, has just as much right to live as you do. There are people who won't kill a fly because they don't think it's right to take life from something else that walks and crawls. And you will find those are the most radical ones that won't kill a fly, but they do exist. But coming closer home than that, there's a whole lot of people underneath the fly. This is the whole premise behind why here in Pennsylvania we have the rule that you can't kill a dog or a cat. That passed a few years back, and I won't go into that long story. But we've got these laws that are made because people are viewing humans as equal to animals or in many cases inferior to animals. So animals get rights that humans don't get. And people, we are so messed up in that whole mindset because we have rejected God. And while we're doing that, while we're giving animals equal rights to humans, we can kill babies every day of the week. Why? Because in our godless pursuit of sensuality, we want no responsibility for the fruit that comes from the union of a man and a woman. So let's kill the baby. That's okay. Because we believe in free morality. But animals? Oh no. We protect the animals. Now I just say all this morning, brothers and sisters, and you can tell this is a subject that has been passionately brewing in my heart for a long time. Because we need to understand the sinister nature of the motivations that are coming from those positions. And we need to understand how our position differs drastically from those positions and how that needs to work out in a very different way in how we live. We care about the environment. We care about animals. But we do so from a standpoint of stewardship and of concern and how we take dominion. We do not accept the premise of the other. So if I was to try and take Gary's illustration here of the yoke and make it work here, there are some similarities in the concerns that we could have with believers and with secularists about the about taking care of the environment and or taking care of animals. But if we were to yoke up with them because of the incredible difference in values that underlays those things, do you see how the yoke would be drastically unequal? I mean, literally, it's worse than what he's shown here this morning. Our values are so different that one, we'd be in the yoke backwards. One would be going this way, and the other one would be going this way. Try and pull a plow like that. That is what we're dealing with. And yet, as I view Christians, the Christian landscape across our nation, I'm going to say across the entire West, and it's infecting the world. It's definitely rooted in the West and Western liberal theology. But there is a tremendous amount of Christians who claim to be believers and are reaching across to hold hands with the secularists. To the point that you can go to a lot of churches today who claim to be Christian and they're trying to find ways to fit evolution into the story of creation. And I'm just saying, just stop it already. Because the people who invented evolution do not have a platform of accepting a God who created everything. And we are fools for thinking that we can go over there and hold hands with them and embrace any of their ideas and still maintain a pure faith in God. The children said it very well today. What happens when you go hang out with a bad person long enough? You become bad. And I wonder this morning, and now we're back to the burden that I would have shared in the call to faithful living. But I wonder this morning, you know, the whole issue of marriage. The messed up situations in our society today have their roots in the church. The church, the believers, what should have been the community of called out ones, they own the issue of marriage because many years ago already, we began to compromise on what God says about marriage. We've accepted, and I'm not saying us here. I'm saying Christianity in a larger context. And you can even, you know, this isn't Mennonite versus Protestant versus versus Catholic or Orthodox. You can find these infections everywhere in all of these denominations. And I'm thankful that most of the churches that we would relate to have stayed on the safe side of these issues. But brothers and sisters, it's out there. Whether Mennonite or Protestant or Orthodox, it's out there. And these divisions are there. And there are people who are reaching across and trying to say, well, you know what? It's such a messed up world. We just have to compromise on these things somehow. Really? And what happens when we compromise? Do we become like them, or do they become like us? And I will never forget what went on in my heart. You know, Frank talked yesterday about, do you remember where you were on 9/11? I do. I remember exactly where I stood on 9/11. Because one of my younger brothers called me, and he was over there watching those towers burn. He was in New Jersey making a delivery, and he called me, and he's like, you won't believe what I'm seeing. And I will not forget the shock that went through my heart that day, and I was rooted on the spot. And to this day, I remember that moment. And that's what Frank said, moments like that that hit you deeply emotionally, you remember. Well, there was another moment for me like that in relation to church history. My roots are in the Mennonite church, but originally in the Lancaster Conference, Franconia Conference. My grandfather grew up, he was a minister in the Lancaster Conference. My mother came from Franconia Conference. And then for you people who were there yesterday, Frank said about Eastern starting in 1968, which was 2 years before I was born. My parents made the decision to join Eastern. And then there's been 100 groups come out of that. Not quite, but a lot. And so over the last 50 years, we have a tremendous outflow from some of those divisions that took place. But go back through all that, and my roots are back there. And I remember when a friend of mine told me, in relation to this whole issue of accepting gay marriage in the church, which was a thing that I would have thought, sure, as Mennonites, we'll never go there. Because the Bible is very clear about God's design for man and woman. There's no ambiguity about it. You literally have to simply cut passages out of Scripture and just put your Bible aside if you're going to say that you can somehow blend that with being a Christian. But there's six Lancaster Conference congregations, I guess, in New York City. And a friend of mine who was part of Lancaster Conference, and this is going back maybe 30 years, 35 years, told me that they were opening up to it in New York City. And I was shocked. Now, of course, it's continued to evolve since that time, and now it's a much more widespread controversy, and you'll find it not just in New York City anymore. But why? The church owns these things. Why? Because we have reached across and been willing to touch hands with people from the other side on supposed areas that we can find common ground. And we've tried to yoke up with people who know not God. And I'm just saying, brothers and sisters, to whatever extent our concern about animals interfaces with theirs, let us not confuse ourselves about the issue of why and where we stand. Because if we're going to be faithful in our day and age, and if we're going to pass on our faith, a faith that we own, to our children, then we must know why we have believed. And I can tell you, the end of these two worldviews is drastically different. The end of that one has no good outcome for humans. We are the problem in every way. And there's only one good answer, and that's if humans go away. That's ultimately where it is. And if you look at every policy and every desire that comes out of the worldview of the secularists and those things, it is going to be a reduction of humanity and its footprint here on earth. That's where they go. Now, because of our belief in God and our acceptance of what God says, and we believe that this earth has a finite existence, and someday this is going to come to end, and someday there's going to be a judgment. Well, we know where, in our view, that puts that side of the equation. But until that happens, we're here with these responsibilities to be good stewards, to take dominion and care for the earth in a responsible way as God would want us to. And so God help us and give us that vision. This is our Father's world. He shines in all that's fair. In the rustling grass, I hear Him pass, and He speaks to me everywhere. Do you believe this morning? And are you willing to be His servant, His agent here on earth, and stand for everything God has called you to stand for, and not compromise one finger with the people who do not believe in God? I'll just share practically. And I'm no scientist, so I defer to the ones who study this much more deeply than I. But to my understanding, and as much as I look at things in relation to climate change, I do believe climate is changing a little. And I believe that climate cycles, this current hysteria that we have, which he quoted from the 70s. It's incredibly interesting to go back and look at those quotes since this hysteria started and look at the timetables that they put into their quotes going back there to about the 70s, 60s is when it started. And I think there's reasons for that socially and politically why that was a time frame that all this got rolling. But they've been making these ridiculous predictions of apocalypse since then. And we're decades past when this earth was supposed to have been completely destroyed, according to the early ones. And so it doesn't lend a lot of credibility to the people today that are saying Brooklyn's going to be underwater in 5 years, or Lower Manhattan, or 10 years, or whatever it is. I don't believe a word of it. I think it's very possible that sea levels could rise and fall a little bit. But we lose ice here, we build ice here. We lose ice in this time period and it builds in this time period. And you can go back through history and you can see those cycles. And that's personally what I believe. Okay? But I believe any scientist who can explain that much more eloquently than I, but who is willing to come from this side of the board and accept that there's a God that made this, there's a God designed this, I think he's going to be able to tell you much more convincingly than I why these things work that way. But when you reject God and you view humans as the problem, the only thing you have left, brothers and sisters, is fear. 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 And fear is the great motivator. And fear is the thing by which they use to control everybody these days. And you can talk about that much more broadly than climate change, but that is their motivation. And everything they do and say comes out of that motive. I'm going to just close there. I think you got the burden of my heart. And I think God wanted us to look at this morning with the things that he orchestrated here today. And my challenge is simply this. As we consider our responsibility before God as stewards and caretakers of this earth, how do we fulfill that responsibility in a godly way, but without holding hands and getting in the yoke with the secular world who does not believe in him? Thank you for your attention, and God bless you.
Well, thank you, Brother Carl, for that admonition and that call. Maybe I should say the call. The call back to God's plan. I mean, God has designed a plan and for us to live out here on this earth, and he has placed us here with a purpose. And I appreciate that call to stay with God's original plan and purpose and not get distracted with the world around us and the many voices that are out there that are raising concerns, that are trying to cause fear. And one thing about the global warming and rising of the seas, I tried to find a verse there before I came up. This is a verse that's very similar. I thought it was in Psalms, but it's in Proverbs 8:29. It brings the thought out. And this is the thought that I when I hear about global warming, I think of this. In Proverbs 8:29, when he gave to the sea his decrees, and that the waters should not pass his commandment when he appointed the foundations of the earth. And the thought there is that the seas have a boundary. You know, God set a boundary there. The seas are not going to go beyond where God has planned. So we can place our faith and our confidence in God. All right, let's open it up. If anybody has any comments on that, on anything that we talked about this morning. Brother Ephraim.
I really, really appreciated both messages and how they went together and how our minds were taken this morning. I'd just like to give us a little tip in how to understand how the world throws pressure at us to start thinking their way. What they do is take a little phrase, catch a little phrase, and make it very popular, and make it say something that you can't disagree with, and then make you out to be someone that disagrees with that phrase if you don't agree with all their agenda. I'll give you an example, Black Lives Matter. If you don't agree with their agenda and say, no, you're wrong, and pull apart from their agenda, all of a sudden you're labeled as someone that says, no, black lives don't matter. Love is love, same thing. And the one they do with this subject is science is real. There might be other ones too. Recently I was traveling through the countryside in New England and came across this little congregational church building, and out on their sign they had "We believe," and then a whole list of these items. Black Lives Matter, love is love, science is real, down the list. There's a couple more. Every one of those phrases, I couldn't have said, no, that's not true. But knowing what's behind all those things, either those people were saying doing this in ignorance, or else they were flaming liberals. So it's just good for us to understand the psychological pressures and cleverness that the world uses to push these things on us. Thank you again, Carl, for all that. It's good.
Yeah, we need to bring to mind and consider these things so we can not get swayed by the world and their propaganda tactics that they use.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.